used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is September the 28th, 2018. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined today by my co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
And our co-host, Carol Davies-McIntosh.
Hello there.
Welcome, everyone. This show is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy because on this big, beautiful edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. Now on to today's show. This week's show is dedicated to the sharks and to the late Canadian filmmaker and shark protection activist Rob Stewart. Rob Stewart is best known for his two previous films, Sharkwater and Revolution, which have been the top one and three documentary films made in Canada of all time. Although he tragically passed away in January 2017 while making his new film, his work and his legacy lives on. With the help of his family, the new film Sharkwater Extinction has been completed, and it is a follow-up to where the last film left off, further educating the public about the perils that sharks face in the multi-million dollar shark fin and drift net fishing industries. Although the film doesn't hit theaters nationwide until October 19th, if you're in Vancouver, you can watch the film tonight and this Sunday afternoon as a special presentation of the Vancouver International Film Festival. On today's show, we will feature a dual interview with two of Rob's longtime friends and collaborators, and they are shark conservationists as well. We are pleased to have Brock Cahill and Julie Anderson on the show to speak more about the film and why we need to protect the world's remaining apex predators as a crucial part of our ecosystem. That interview is coming up in 9 minutes, so please do stay tuned. Now, last week, we were given the opportunity to see a press screening of the new film, Sharkwater Extinction, and we would like to share our impressions of the film. Carol.
Yeah, I've always, I guess I have a respect for the ocean, and I've always had respect for all of the animals in the ocean, but what Sharkwater Extinction really impacted me, because within the first few minutes of the film, what you see is a mid-sized shark, looks like it's probably a fairly young one, taken onto a boat. It's fins cut off with a big machete, and then the shark still alive, thrown back into the water, and you watch as the shark floats down to the bottom and has no ability to move, which means he can't breathe, and he will just lie on the bottom of the ocean and die. And that was, out of that whole film, there's a lot of good moments, but for me, that hit me really hard.
What about you, Jen? What were your impressions?
I mean, I'm always looking at the bigger picture. I'm so grateful for documentary filmmakers to expose something that most people don't have or make time to read about and educate themselves. And films are so powerful and much easier for people to obtain that amount of information. And what always strikes me is that we still live in a world where animals are so commodified and they are so innocent and vulnerable, and especially sharks, so sweet. I mean, they've really been villainized in Hollywood and movies, but what were the stats again? That how many sharks kill humans per year versus how many elephants? Six sharks kill six humans per year versus elephants. I think it was 200 or something. I thought that was a really interesting point to put into the film. Yeah, it's time to change our views toward animals, for sure.
Yeah, I want to say that in 2006, when the original Sharkwater film came out, I was just so blown away. I was just seeing this very young filmmaker, I remember being so impressed that Rob was so young, yet he was out there doing this crazy work where he's risking his life to go and expose this horrible industry to the world, because that was his passion. And for me, that is what left me from it. You know, when I found out a couple years ago that Rob was currently making this new film, I was thinking, I want to have him on the show. Mm-hmm. And I had that plan in my head for mm-hmm. years. And then so tragically, this accident happened last year. I'm just really grateful that the film was actually made and it has come out. We've seen it. It's debuting tonight. And I think that this message that Rob has is going to last on for hopefully into years to come, so that we can end shark finning industry forever.
Mm-hmm. He certainly was brave. I remember some scenes in the film where it's like a mafia, these people that own these shark finning organizations, and to know that Rob died from a completely unrelated to that situation incident is surprising to me, because while watching the film, I thought for sure he's going to be shot at for what he's doing. And for those of you who haven't seen this film, please take the opportunity to come to Film Fest this weekend, 6:30 tonight and 2:00 on Sunday, and check this out. It's quite spectacular.
Yeah, thanks for your thoughts.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
And now we have some upcoming animal rights related events. Do you have friends who support the Vancouver Aquarium and you'd rather they knew the truth behind captivity? Invite them to attend the documentary screening of Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, hosted by Vegans of UBC and the director of the film, Gary Charbonneau, who will be answering questions afterwards. This takes place Thursday, October the 4th, 5:30 to 7:30 at UBC Global Lounge, 2205 Lower Mall. In other news, as you may have heard, Sport Chek has welcomed back fur into their line, even after saying they would no longer sell it. The fur trim is from Canadian coyotes and they claim it is ethically sourced, and of course we know there's no such thing as ethical murder, so we're asking for your help to create a pressure campaign against Winners and Sport Chek to tell everybody else that it's simply unacceptable to profit off torturing innocent animals. Please call as often as you can from wherever you are, 1-877-977-2435 and 1-800-646-9466, or contact Winners and Sport Chek via their website. Sad news, a new flagship Canada Goose clothing store will be opening up in the Pacific Centre Mall, Vancouver. Animal rights activists are obviously livid, and for those who may not be aware, Canada Goose brand jackets are made with the feathers of tortured geese and coyote fur trim from coyotes who are trapped in the wild in painful leg hold traps. They are often seen chewing off their own feet just to escape. These jackets are so popular in Vancouver that in the winter season, I can see up to 40 jackets within my vicinity in the downtown core. Flagship stores in New York, Toronto, and London have had large crowds of animal rights activists protesting loudly during all business hours, all season long, outside the shops, and we're hoping for a similar resistance here in Vancouver upon the opening of the Canada Goose store this fall. Stay tuned for news on that. And Allison, you have an event coming up that's exciting, a Thanksgiving event.
Yes, so we're calling it the Compassionate Thanksgiving this year. This is an event that I've been involved with. We've been doing it now for, I think, 7 or 8 years. So where do you go when you want to celebrate Thanksgiving but without the murder? You come to our annual Compassionate Thanksgiving event, which is being hosted by Meatless Meetup and Vegans of UBC this year. It's on Monday, October the 8th. It's going to be a huge potluck celebration. We have 200 people come out out every year. We're hoping to have more this year. So that's Monday, October the 8th, and starts at 4:30 p.m. at the Great Hall, which is on the second floor of the AMS Nest, which is the new student union building at UBC. For more details, you can go to meetup.com/meetlessmeetup and find out more about it there. And I hope people will come out and bring a potluck dish that feeds 8 people, and we're going to have a great feast. So if you have an animal rights related event that you would like to have broadcast on the air, you can send it to us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. So for our feature interview today, we have Brock Cahill and Julie Anderson. They are both here in town today to promote the brand new film, Sharkwater Extinction, which will make its debut here in Vancouver tonight at the Vancouver International Film Festival and also this Sunday. Sharkwater Extinction is a follow-up to the critically acclaimed Sharkwater, the first film of the late Canadian filmmaker Rob Stewart. This original film brought the devastating issue of shark finning to the world stage in 2006. In Sharkwater Extinction, Rob continues his crusade through the oceans and across 4 continents to investigate the corruption behind a multi-billion dollar pirate fishing trade and massive illegal shark fin industry. Brock Cahill is a diver and friend of Rob's for over 10 years. Brock traveled with Rob and the production team to Costa Rica, California, and the Bahamas, and appears in the film. He is also a founder of the Sea Change Agency, a nonprofit aimed at improving oceanic ecosystems for sharks, sea turtles, and all endangered marine species. Julie Anderson is a passionate grassroots activist and collaborator and founder of the nonprofit Shark Angels. Inspired by Sharkwater, she also partnered with Rob Stewart to start United Conservationists, leading a fin-free movement throughout the world and to ban shark fin. Hello, Brock and Julie, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you so much for joining us in the studio today to discuss the film Sharkwater Extinction and the issues behind a need to save the sharks from human use and exploitation. We all saw the film last week, as we mentioned earlier. I was so deeply moved by Rob's first film, Sharkwater, in 2006. And I have to say that the impactful and beautiful storytelling that is led by Rob continues throughout this new film. But as he says in the new film, his job is not done yet. Brock and Julie, I wonder if you could both start by telling us about how you both came to meet Rob Stewart and how he impacted your efforts in advocating for shark conservation.
Absolutely. I met Rob 11 years ago when Sharkwater was just coming to the screens in Canada. I was living in New York City at the time, and I'd had my moment of meeting a shark, so I had kind of figured out that they weren't Jaws, and I definitely was into sharks, but I didn't really think that I could do anything to help sharks. You know, I was obviously passionate about the oceans and passionate about sharks, and that's why I went and saw Sharkwater. And like you, I was just blown away. You know, here was this young, passionate guy who was literally like, you know, a young real life Indiana Jones, right? I mean, he's getting shot at, he's taking on the mafia, he's basically fighting for this animal that he's passionate about. And that passion, you know, I mean, it was absolutely contagious. So completely uncharacteristically, I waited until the film was over, was not at all involved in conservation at the time. I owned an advertising agency, but somehow in that film, I thought, you know what I can do? I can be a PR rep for sharks. So I waited for Rob and just started talking to him. And I tell you what, as soon as you meet him, and for those of you who have met him, you just know, I mean, here's this amazing human being that can change the world, and you just want to be a part of that. So I told Rob I was on board. 4 days later, I had decided to sell my business and everything and came up to Toronto with a notebook full of information about how I thought we could collaborate and save sharks. And that was 11 years ago, 3 nonprofits, several missions, including Fin Free, dozens of countries and 2 movies. So still fighting the battle and still, you know, working with Rob.
Wow, that's a very amazing and impressive answer, Julie. What about you, Brock? How did Rob and you connect together?
Well, my story is not that dissimilar in that I saw this dude freediving with sharks on the cover of a magazine in his Speedo, and I was like, who is this guy? That's amazing. That's really cool. I kind of maybe want to do that too. And then the movie Sharkwater came out shortly after that fact, and of course I made sure to go see the film. And once I did, like Julie, I knew that my life had been impacted in a way that this story of this courageous and enthusiastic young man that wouldn't take no for an answer and was just going to throw his life on the line to save sharks and to save the world was going to be somebody that influenced my trajectory as well. So I called him out of the blue. I said, hey, dude, what you just did is amazing. Any chance we could be friends? And he's like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Who are you? And I'm like, oh, I'm a yoga teacher in Los Angeles. I don't know what I could do to help. And he's like, well, I do. You could teach me yoga. And that's how we started. We became friends. We started practicing yoga together. He came on a yoga retreat with me to Mexico, and we went freediving with whale sharks. And so he taught me about diving with sharks and the power of film, and I kind of imparted some wisdom of yoga in his direction, and it became a long-lasting friendship that lasts about 12 years now.
Since the 2006 film Sharkwater came out, conservation groups have been created and shark finning is banned throughout most of the world, yet its illegal trade still persists. And I understand that over 100 million sharks are being killed each year for their fins. Can you speak with us about how dire a situation this is, as a trade is destroying some of the most important predators in the world? And how does mass killing cause a ripple effect into our ecosystem?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I think it's as easy as there's nothing extra in nature. And for sure, I mean, we've seen the removal of predators and really what happens. I mean, the wolves in Yellowstone is a perfect example, right? I mean, not only did it affect, you know, the species below the wolves, but I mean, it affected the water clarity, it affected, you know, the trees, the bark, the leaves. So that kind of terrestrial example is the exact same thing that goes on in the oceans, right? Sharks have sat atop the food chain in the oceans for 450 million years, surviving five major extinctions, right? I mean, they're older than the dinosaurs. And essentially, they've formed the oceans as we know it. And life on this planet is possible because of the oceans, and therefore because of sharks. So removing sharks from that ecosystem has huge cascading effects. You know, the oceans give us life. They give us, you know, our weather and our temperature and our planet. They regulate that. They basically keep the oceans healthy, too. And every second breath you take comes from the ocean. So when somebody in a landlocked country or state asks us, well, why should I care about sharks? We tell them, well, do you breathe? Because quite frankly, you should care about sharks. And that's really what gets affected when sharks are taken out of an ecosystem. And yes, absolutely, you know, shark finning has been curbed, but unfortunately, it hasn't been curbed to the degree that we need it to be. And shark populations are plummeting. Some populations are down 99%, and this still continues. And, you know, while shark, you know, is definitely not necessarily on menus in certain restaurants, it's still really emerging in other countries, in India and Thailand. So the battle is just begun. And I think that's really why shark water extinction is so important right now.
And as we learned in the film, not just shark fin soup. There was shark fin used in cosmetics and pet food. And what else was it?
Exactly. So shark water really was a journey of Rob's as a young adult to uncover this horrible thing happening to 73 million sharks, which was the process of shark finning, which, as you said, is absolutely brutal. I mean, these animals are alive and they're put back into the water, and it's just wasteful. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. But shark water extinction is about the fact that 80 million other sharks are disappearing too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was with Rob in Japan when 7,000 sharks were landed at a tuna port. 7,000 sharks. I mean, it's really incomprehensible to even imagine how many sharks that is. Mm-hmm. And as we saw these sharks being unloaded, we thought, okay, here we go. You know, they're going to fin all of these sharks. And instead, they sold off some of the sharks, the mako sharks, for meat. They took the salmon sharks and they removed their livers. And they took the blue sharks and put them on trucks, which we followed to go to fertilizer and pet food places. Wow. And therein lied the journey of shark water extinction, which was essentially, oh my gosh, we are actually consuming sharks for so much more than shark fin soup. We are consuming them in our makeup. We're consuming them in sunscreen, in lotion. So shark squalene oil is used in a lot of common products. Shark is relabeled and also fed to us too. There's 18 different names for shark. So if you're eating things like imitation crab or fish cakes or fish patties, most likely there's shark in them. Pet food, if it contains ocean whitefish or flake, that's probably shark as well.
Good
so yeah, so 50% of the pet food that we tested contains shark as well. So essentially, I mean, and I was horrified as well as a conservationist to find out, holy cow, there are things in my own environment that contain shark, including, you know, fertilizer for my plants as well. It's incredible how many uses we've come up for this amazing super predator. It's really horrifying.
Mm-hmm. Brock, in one of the first scenes in the new film, you travel to Costa Rica, which exports shark fins against the CITES agreement. For those of our listeners who don't know what CITES is, it's the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. Can you tell us more about this agreement and how countries like Costa Rica are getting away with going against it?
Certainly. Well, CITES, unfortunately as it is kind of a gentleman's handshake. There's no governing body or there's no enforcement of the agreements that are made at these conventions. So whilst it's good to have this down on paper, all that really is a piece of paper. There's no one out in the world that actually says, oh, you're in violation of the CITES agreement, you need to take a look at things. If Costa Rica, for instance, wants to go against the CITES agreement, there's no international law body or any sort of Interpol that will hold them accountable for this. So it's on their own good word that they'll take this into consideration and do what's right. Now, a lot of times folks do. When they know things are against the natural order of things and against natural law, for instance, they'll sometimes adhere to it. But in the cases that we're talking about, as we've just found out, shark is worth a lot of money. So there's a ton of black market and there's a lot of underbelly that allows these products to continue to go out. And they make their way through Hong Kong into all different ports of call.
I want to go back to the money a bit. How much money is being made?
This is a $1 billion industry. Shark fin is the third most illegally traded substance on the planet after drugs and human beings. So we're talking about a boatload of cash.
And who's making that money?
Well, it ranges. You know, there's an industry that's at large. It's, of course, shark finning industry. But now, as Julia has mentioned, in this film, we recognize we don't just have a finning problem any longer. We have a shark fishing problem. And there's a lot of money to be made from these byproducts. Unwillingly, throughout the years, with the success of Shark Water and with this campaign and this movement, other parts of the shark have become valuable, like the livers and, you know, some of the meat products. And like in Canada, just a couple weeks ago, they found out there's a report done by Oceana that nearly half of all fish that goes to market for consumption is mislabeled. So Julie was talking about mako sharks. A lot of times that's sold as swordfish, which is worth a lot of cash.
Right.
You know, if you go to a fish market, swordfish sells for a lot of money. So now suddenly you catch a mako shark, which can be disguised as a swordfish. There's a lot of money involved. So it's not just one individual or one industry that's making cash off these guys.
It's a lot. So, sorry, Julie, do you want to?
Oh, I just wanted to add that I think the people that are making the most money are the middlemen, right? And Brock said that, you know, he mentioned the drug cartels and weapons and, you know, the endangered species trade is using those same channels.
Yes.
And we're dealing with the same people, right? So we are literally, as conservationists, literally and figuratively, right, outmanned and outgunned in these situations. And a single whale shark fin can bring in $50,000. So, I mean, when you start thinking about numbers like that, it's not the fishermen in these, you know, decrepit, collapsing fishing villages that you really are going to blame because, you know, they're making pennies on the dollar. It's really these, you know, destructive criminal middlemen and obviously the demand, too, that's creating it.
So I know with CITES in Canada, it's Canada Customs will enforce it if they find it. But the problem that you were talking about is that a lot of the stuff is mislabeled. So it would have to be DNA tested.
Exactly. And therein lies the issue too, right? Because CITES only protects 9 species of sharks. So essentially, those are the protected species. And as a trade officer, if you're looking at a bag full of shark fin, how do you know this came from a protected scalloped hammerhead versus, say, you know, a blue shark? And so you're right. It has to be DNA tested. You know, it's obviously on the burden of these countries and also on the trade officers who just simply cannot enforce it at that level. So, you know, that's why trying to ban the import and export of shark fin and also the consumption of shark fin is so important.
Well, I just wanted to talk about a scene of the film that really stuck with me. There was a fellow who owns the Shark Hunter tour boat. What was his name?
Mark the Shark.
Mark the Shark. It's so, for those who haven't seen the film, it's basically a tour boat that allows for catch and release of sharks for selfies, if you ask me. The fellow who runs the business, Mark the Shark, admitted that the sharks who were caught and released had almost no opportunity of survival. Yet, he kind of shrugged it off and blamed the sharks for taking the bait on the hook, absolving himself of any responsibility. And we know that this is also the case for other sea animals, such as fish, and I'm sure we all know people who justify fishing as harmless because they just catch and release. And I have even family members and good friends who do this. So how do you two appeal to people in your own life who use this kind of justification as a way of entertaining themselves or enjoying nature?
Well, we provide them with the information because, as you know, like if you try to preach to somebody about this or you try to brace them or, you know, confront them about it, often they're going to dig their heels in and become defensive about it. So if we can present them with a beautiful image and the correct research behind what's going down there, for instance, in that scene that you're talking about, we find out that for hammerhead sharks, they're extremely sensitive beings. So well over 90% of them that are caught on a hook do not survive that, whether they're pulled out of the water for just a minute or two to take a picture, like you say, or whether they're dragged onto a beach in South Florida for a sport fishing tournament. These guys aren't going to make it, and it's a real tragedy. And once we let people know this, we're very hopeful that, again, people will make the right decisions. Okay. That was one of Rob's core beliefs, that if people know better, they'll do better. Mm-hmm. And so inspiring that level of hope and that level of trust and belief in humanity was something that he thought was very important for us to survive this next period of our existence on this rock.
That's certainly a crucial time, isn't it, for humanity?
The most that we've faced thus
Absolutely.
Far.
I know. This is why I am a bit preachy. Just a little.
So I wanted to talk more about the state of the shark fin ban in the Lower Mainland here in Vancouver, in BC, in Canada, federally. I know there's been initiatives. We had Bill C-380 that went into the House of Commons years ago. I did an interview with Finn Donnelly about that. And we report a lot on the news here at Animal Voices, right? And we've gone through, you know, this municipality is proposing a ban, and then this one isn't, and Richmond, I know, doesn't want to have a ban. Carol has been doing a lot of research on this. I don't know what you found, Carol, but maybe we can discuss that, and Julie, you can give us an update on what the state of shark finning is in Canada.
Well, what I found out was, and it was quite a slog to try to find out any information really about shark fin bans. But New Westminster has a ban and has had a ban since 2012, which was when Vancouver, Burnaby, and Richmond also talked about having a ban. As far as I could tell, the cities that I spoke to didn't actually know, but I couldn't find anything that said that they did have a ban, so I'm assuming that they don't. Coquitlam also does not, and they actually did the research for me, so they don't have a ban, but they had all talked about it. There is a Green Party private members bill in front of the BC legislature. Not sure if that's going anywhere. And there's also a federal private members bill in front of the Senate right now. Maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, we're very hopeful in terms of the bill in front of the Senate right now. Senator McDonald is bringing it forward, and we're hoping to have a reading actually next week when we're doing a shark water screening as well. So the timing is fantastic. You know, I think when we look at, you know, this horrible dark cloud that's over our head in terms of losing Robbie, at the same time, you know, some of this legislation has been introduced. And, you know, we worked very hard after Sharkwater to ban shark fin in several cities, including Toronto, which is where Rob is from. And we were able to successfully get that passed. And then that was overturned due to jurisdictional jurisprudence. So, you know, at that point in time, we realized, okay, we've got to go at the country level, and we can't fight at the city, municipality, or province or state level. We really need a countrywide ban. So we're hoping that we're going to be able to move forward with the ban of import and export of shark fin. So, you know, a lot of people, when they look at the shark fin issue, are able to point fingers and say, oh, well, this is someone else's problem. This is obviously going on in Asia and we have nothing to do with it. But the fact of the matter is Canada is the largest importer and exporter of shark fin outside of Asia. Right. So it can absolutely absolutely make a very, very large difference.
Huge difference.
And at the same time, legislation is being proposed in the United States as well. So, you know, with shark water, 150 million people live in a place where shark fin is an illegal substance. And we really hope to add to those numbers through these two bills.
Great.
Thank you for that information. We're just going to take a quick break here and we'll get back to talking about shark water.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
So we're here in the studio with Brock Cahill and Julie Anderson. They have been speaking to us about shark conservation issues and the new film Sharkwater Extinction that comes out tonight. It makes its premiere at the Vancouver International Film Festival tonight, Friday, September the 28th, and also will be playing on Sunday, September the 30th at 2 p.m. and opens in theaters nationwide on October the 19th. So, Carol, you have a question about toxicity in sharks.
Yeah, I want to go back to that, talking about them being apex predators, and of course, toxins build up in food chains. I've come across a lot of studies that confirm that shark meat contains several toxins, and they included mercury, lead, arsenic, and BMAA, which is a very serious neurotoxin. Yes. And they've actually implicated that in Parkinson's disease and ALS.
Mm-hmm. So that's developmental disorders.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the FDA in the U.S. has suggested that pregnant women don't eat any shark.
And children.
Yeah, and children, right? Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit more about that toxicity and maybe the education piece around that?
Yeah, what you mentioned there is vitally important. So not only are we recognizing the fact that this exists in the food chain, but that we go back to that mislabeling thing. So now we recognize that these toxins are being amassed but going to market under the guise of being something that's healthy or safe as an alternative. So this is not a good situation whatsoever. It brings up one of those hot topics of making sure you know what the ingredients are in food. This is a big thing down in California right now. Everybody's up in arms about labeling the products
that go to
market.
Exactly. So you could have that pregnant woman or that little child eating shark and thinking that it was some other fish.
That it was something that was actually feeding their brain in the development of their, their growing child. So that's like, you know, I can't think of worse false advertising of putting something like that at risk. Mm-hmm. It's tough.
And it's not just the FDA, it's the World Health Organization too, right? So, you know, they've declared that shark is absolutely not something that should be consumed at all. That's just terrifying, especially when we think about how many things shark most likely is. I mean, if you're going to a fast food restaurant, God forbid, and ordering, you know, a fish sandwich, most likely you're consuming shark as well. So, you know, we've started the testing process, and that's part of, you know, the action-oriented component to shark water extinction. As you know, Rob didn't just change the world for documentary filmmaking and make it all about adventure, no more talking boring heads, right? I mean, here's this young, amazing guy going out there and getting shot at and fighting for his passion. But at the same time, he created an engine for change. And with shark water, you know, we've talked about the fin-free movement. 12 million square miles have been protected as shark sanctuaries thanks to shark water as well. So with shark water extinction, really what it's about is becoming educated consumers and going shark free.
Right.
Yep. And in response to your question about how toxins amass in the food chain, you know, everything does as we go up in level. You talked about trophic cascades earlier with how the lower level parts of the food chain affect the upper level and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So as we start to go up the food chain, it's not just incrementally, it's exponentially these toxins amass in the tissues because they're such long-lived animals, you know, and they are really architects of the ecosystem in that they weed out the sick and the dying species, and they keep like the house clean, so to speak.
Right.
You know, and this is something that we direly depend upon, making sure that the oceans continue to produce oxygen and, for some folks, food source as well. So there's different ways to do this, and what we do need to recognize that if we continue taking these animals, which are not only vital for the survival of our planet, out of the ecosystem, but eat them, we're not doing a service to the ecosystem, but also to ourselves, because that level of, you know, pollution in our systems is going to lead to a whole lot of hurt.
I think we have to start seeing ourselves as part of the ecosystem, not as at being a separate entity to it. We are
all connected.
Yes, and that was one of Rob's biggest hopes and dreams, was to rewildify the planet and have us live in harmony with nature rather than trying to impose our will upon it and trying to, you know, push it into this little box. And this is how society is. We're controlling everything. What you just said is exactly it. We need to live in harmony and become our part of that equation again.
Right.
So I wanted to talk about one of the main scenes in the film, which takes place in Panama, which is an important nursery for sharks, but also is a bustling route where the illegal transport of shark fins takes place. In this scene, Rob and his crew are being taken to an outdoor area where over 38,000 fins have been seized and are being stored under tarps. We are able to see the piles of fins there just sitting all for waste. And to me, they represent thousands of wasted lives and enormity of cruelty and disrespect for our oceans and ecosystems. Brock and Julie, what were your takeaways from this striking scene? Brock, maybe you can start.
Certainly. Well, first, the mass, the scale of things is shocking. You know, like you say, you look and there is a parking lot full of shark fins that have been seized. So what does that equate to in the oceans? It equates to not just a family, but an entire tribe, a nation, however you want to call it, of sharks, a massive number. And what we also learn in that scene is that not only are the mature sharks being taken out of the ecosystem, but the babies as well. Mm-hmm. And they're being cut up and used as ceviche and different other products. So we're harassing this ecosystem on all levels.
And what is ceviche? Sorry.
Ceviche is like it's a raw kind of soup dish. And it's usually used with scallops and other kinds of small fish, but
right.
Baby hammerheads are being disguised as scallops because as they cut the body in small little pieces, they end up looking very much like a scallop. Mm-hmm. So it's being disguised as a scallop and put into this ceviche, which is, you know, kind of an ethnic dish in many different countries across the world, but also in Panama.
And what about you, Julie? What are your thoughts of this one particular scene where there was just those masses of fins just going to, I don't know what was going to happen to them. They're just sitting there in a tarp.
Right. So I think, you know, the fact that they're just sitting there in a tarp brings up a really good point. And that is the fact that, you know, governmental will power to actually enforce the laws. There's 30 countries that have banned shark finning and an additional 20 that have banned shark fishing, but that doesn't mean that shark finning and shark fishing aren't happening still. And therein lies the burden on the country to then enforce those laws and actually have the wherewithal to put boats on the water and actually enforce the laws that they've made. And then once they actually do catch, you know, somebody violating those laws, what do they do? And what do they do with, you know, the fins that they've caught? And from my perspective, I think one of the scariest things is even if the laws are in place, similar to CITES, a lot of these laws aren't being enforced. You know, countries don't have the actual economic capability to put boats out on the water and defend, you know, the creatures that need defending. And then when they do actually catch somebody violating these types of things, very rarely do they actually get anything other than just maybe a slap on the wrist. Sometimes we've even seen them get like pats on the back. So, you know, the fact that those fins weren't seized and destroyed or taken care of in an effective way, to me, really kind of shows that at the end of the day, it's up to all of us as consumers to stop the demand. And it's not just about shark fin at this point. You know, 73 million sharks are being killed for shark fin, but another 80 million are disappearing too. So we've got to be educated consumers. We've got to vote with our dollars. And really, every time we make a buying decision, we decide whether or not an industry that is helping the earth or hurting the earth is going to survive. And I think that's really where it all starts.
Right. And the film speaks about this massive loophole that exists. So all these countries have banned finning, but none have actually banned the importation of shark fins. So this is a part that's missing in the efforts to protect sharks. Can you tell us more about this loophole?
Yeah, this is a tough one because, you know, as you mentioned, there's no sort of regulation in place for importation. So it's really easy to bring fins into port as long as you're not a fishing boat. If you are a shipping boat, you can take a transfer of fins from sea, from, you know, any sort of fishing boat or any number of fishing boats, and put them in a refrigerated container and bring them through port. No problem. That's a real oversight in this issue. So that's one of the reasons that this importation bill in Canada is so important, is that we're looking to stop the trade of these mm-hmm. endangered species. So it really has to go on at this level. We can't just ban finning. It has to be a complete and ban total across the board.
Right. And to clarify, right, I mean, even though finning is banned in these 30 countries, that doesn't mean that they're actually banning sharks being finned. They're banning the process of shark finning and, you know, cutting fins off of a shark while it's alive. That doesn't mean they can't land the shark whole and then remove the fins once the shark is killed. So there are a lot of different loopholes, and, you know, countries are kind of patting themselves on the back saying, oh, look, we banned shark finning. Yes, they've banned an incredibly inhumane practice, but they have not banned the actual issue now, which is the fact that these sharks are still being killed for their fins and now all of their other body parts as mm-hmm. well.
Mm-hmm. And that arrives at port with the fin attached is only a small percentage, like we just discovered. Okay, so there's this ability to transship at sea. This is one of the biggest issues that we can face. We have to stop this.
Right.
So in the original Sharkwater film and now in the new one, one element that breaks up some of the grisly scenes of death that we are presented with are scenes of Rob swimming with the sharks. These images are serene and beautiful, and we are able to observe the sharks in their natural habitat simply living life and swimming around naturally and free. Rob says that we should try to understand what life is like for sharks, how they see the world, and what makes life special for them. I wonder if you could both comment on these thoughts of Rob's. What is life like for sharks, and how can we identify with sharks and see ourselves in them?
I think, you know, that was probably the biggest, you know, realization for me and so many other people. A lot of times we get to take people to meet sharks for the first time. And as conservationists who are out in the field seeing the doom and gloom and the horrible destruction, to see that moment where someone who's afraid of a shark meets this incredible animal and just, you know, switches and realizes, oh my gosh, that shark is not meant to be feared. And then maybe thinks about, like, well, what else was I told that wasn't true? Mm-hmm. They're just absolutely incredible beings. And I think to me, what is so striking is that you think a shark, or at least you're told a shark, is this mindless, you know, man-eating predator. But the fact of the matter is when you spend time underwater with sharks, you realize, you know, kind of how serene and amazing and graceful they are. But at the same time, you realize here are these creatures that have cognitive abilities, that have social structures, that can recognize one another and have unique behaviors, not just to species, but to individuals. And to me, you know, it's very easy to see yourself in sharks because they really do have personalities.
Yeah, I agree with that, and they're extremely sensitive. You know, as Julie mentioned, we're fed this information from a very young age that these are monsters and that they're out to get you. And, you know, Josh is a humongous perpetrator mm-hmm. of that myth. The unfortunate thing is that a lot of people believe that because they haven't had the opportunity to get in the water. But once you do and you recognize the sensitivity of these creatures, it's off the charts. They've survived for 450 million years in the ocean. You think they haven't, you know, evolved to a place of massive sophistication? It's just mind-blowing the amount of sensitivity they have. They have two extra senses that human beings aren't credited of having. Their electromagnetic receptors, both across the front of their nose and down the side of their body, in which they can sense different pressures in the water. They can sense electromagnetic pulses that are given off by prey or by friends or by, as Julie mentions, like social structures, so they can recognize one another. But what we have found is that they start to recognize you as well, and you can communicate with them in this way. It's really, really cool when you get in the water and you see a shark and you are excited to see them. And then they're excited to see you because they're a mirror of sorts. They will reflect exactly what you give to them. If you're freaked out and scared, they're freaked out and scared and they don't know how to react to that. And, you know, just like a dog, when they're a little bit scared, what do they do? You know, I don't know, maybe show their teeth a little bit. But in this instance, if they're happy to see you and you can talk to them a little bit and you can say, hey, I'm not here to eat your food or nothing. They're like, wow, okay. Maybe we could be friends, and they start to check you out, and it becomes a completely different experience. It's a beautiful thing.
Are they curious?
They absolutely are curious.
So curious.
Yeah. They want to get to know you a little bit. What is this about? Why are you here? Are you going to, you know, try to take my my food away from me? Are you my food? Yeah. I'm not really sure about you. So let's talk a little bit. And as soon as you start having that conversation with them, their perspective shifts as well as ours.
Right. Well, we're learning more and more about all kinds of fish and how mm-hmm. intelligent they are and how they make friendships and all of that kind of stuff. So I think we can, you know, look at sharks the same way we look at horses or cows or dogs or any other animal and stop being so self, you know, looking inwards at ourselves and humans as being the pinnacle of life on Earth.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, as we just discussed, 450 million years worth of evolution through every major
exactly.
extinction up until this point, and they have continued to be the architect of what happens on this planet. They've got something that a wealth of experience that we have nowhere even close.
Exactly. Julie, I wanted to, you were talked a little bit about Fin Free, mm-hmm. and you're also founder of Shark Angels mm-hmm. and United Conservationists. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, I'm like a serial conservationist, right? I'm always trying to figure out a way to save sharks. And sometimes it's legislation, and other times it's working with kids and PR. And, you know, I've even done some campaigns out on the open oceans, too. So Shark Angels is all about a community of people that is banding together to change perceptions on sharks and also work with children. Because I think, as Rob believed as well, you know, this really is a global movement, and it's being led by children. Children get it. You know, they know there's nothing extra in nature. They know you can't remove the sharks, and it's very simple for them. They're like, okay, you know, people are killing sharks. All right, what are we going to do to stop it? And we've seen time and time again, when they're empowered and given a voice, mm-hmm. children can stand up and bring about change. And I think that's really, you know, what Shark Angels is about. Shark Angels is also about getting people into the water with sharks, because as we just talked about, you know, one of the biggest things standing in our way in shark conservation specifically is that people think these are monsters. And so if you are telling someone, well, I want to save this horrible, you know, monstrous beast, you know, everyone says, well, why wouldn't we just kill them all, right?
I
mean,
right.
And we're seeing things like that happening in countries like Australia right now. You know, a shark attacked somebody, and what they did is they went out and they started killing sharks. And mm-hmm. so, you know, you think about it, you know, you're not going to go to the Serengeti and say, hey, I want to play tennis, so let's go kill all the lions. At the same time, you know, that's going on in our ocean on a daily basis. So that really is what Shark Angels is about. Now, United Conservationist is Rob's vision and something that I helped Rob start. And United Conservationists really took a different approach to conservation. And Brock and I were just talking about this. Rob was special and a hero in so many different ways. But in one specific way, and I think all of us who probably have worked in conservation before understand, you know, a lot of times conservationists work against each other. So different organizations maybe have different ways of going about things. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly, you know, we're fighting against each other and we're not necessarily fighting for the cause.
Right.
And we're doing ourselves a huge disservice. And, you know, we can look at it in any sort of, you know, fight, whether it's for the oceans or for sharks or for lions or for tigers or whatever it is. And United Conservationists was Rob's vision about how conservation organizations could work together. And he proved time and time again that they could. And I know Brock has a really exciting story to share too, in terms of what, you know, conservation groups can do together when they rise above it and they really do pool their efforts.
Yeah, Robbie was very adamant that, you know, we have to work for what we believe in and fight for what's beautiful rather than fight against each other over these kind of things.
Right.
And we started working on the California Driftnet fishery not that long ago. This is a terrible fishery that mm-hmm. hangs a curtain of death in the water. It's a mile long and it hangs about 130 feet in the water column, catching everything in its wake, meaning whales, sea turtles, dolphins, seabirds, all kinds of different things. They're aimed at swordfish. But one in every seven animals is a sword. So this is a terrible percentage. But we've been fighting against this fishery for quite some time. The battle's been waging for almost 20 years. Nobody had the courage to go out and get into the water to show people the atrocities of what was happening beneath the surface until Robbie agreed to do so. So he and I went out and we shot some of the unfortunate images that you will see in the film, and mm-hmm. ran into a bit of trouble out on the high seas right in our own home port of California. But the good news is, when we showed the public this footage, they were outraged and they said, this can't be happening on our watch. This is California, for crying out
exactly.
loud. We're environmentally friendly.
Right.
We're ecologically conscious.
Mm-hmm.
We have to stop this now. And we did. It went through the House and the Senate last month, and yesterday it was signed by the governor of California, and now it's a law.
Right. Awesome.
SwiftNet fishery is done.
Wow.
And I think the most amazing thing about that, in addition to the fact that, you know, it really was film, and that's what Rob believed, is that the camera was our biggest tool and weapon as conservationists, and he's proved it time and time again. You know, here were several organizations that decided to work together, regardless of, you know, what their particular goals were. No one was worried about who was going to get the donations or who was going to get the email addresses, and they all came together and they made change happen. And that truly is what United Conservationists is all about. You know, Rob created campaigns that were open source. So to kind of borrow from a computer technology standpoint, he would create these campaigns, didn't need to associate himself to them, just put them out into the world. That's what FinFree is. That's what SharkFree is going to be too. And just allow people to run with it. You know, it wasn't about ego. It wasn't about anything other than just making change.
Right. Wow. That's what we need to do.
That's it.
Yeah, that's just amazing news. I was going to ask you, why is DriftNet fishing still allowed? And you already have an update for us. So what do you think? I mean, we're making changes. Changes happen. What do you think needs to be done now to stop the industry from even existing? And what is your opinion on the matter of educating those who eat shark fin soup to stop? Because it really comes from demand. When there's no demand, the supply will stop. Is that something that you think needs to happen? Is there something else that we need to do to put an end to this devastation to the sharks in our ecosystem?
Well, that's a really good question. And to be honest with you, a lot has happened as far as the education of the folks that were eating shark fin soup previously. In Hong Kong alone, the consumption of shark fin soup has gone down by more than 80%. It's been curtailed at all governmental functions. Many of the people that are having their weddings in Hong Kong have opted to not have it at their wedding instead. It was seen as a status symbol at these big community engagements. But there has been a lot of change going on there. As we know, Hong Kong is one incident, although it was the largest market for shark fin and continues to be the largest port and distributor of shark fin, its own consumption has decreased rapidly. Now what we need to do is make sure that that information gets out to the other countries that are picking up the baton, so to speak, like into mainland China and over into Taiwan. So we need to get that information out there. It's a challenging equation to get information to the public in these places, but we won't rest and we won't stop until it has made its way into people's homes and into their minds.
And Rob is a real unsung hero in that area too. And again, you know, it wasn't about ego. It wasn't about bringing about change so he could associate his name with it. You know, he's done a lot of work over in mainland China. We worked with Yao Ming, did several commercials. Those commercials were aired during the Beijing Olympics. And then studies found that 89% of the people that saw those commercials indicated that they were not going to consume shark fin anymore. So there's definite ways to make changes. Rob raised $150,000 in order to re-edit shark water completely, so that it could be aired on China public television as well. And nobody knows about this, right? So it was in Cantonese and Mandarin, and people would say, oh, okay, like, why did you need to re-edit shark water? And it turned out it had nothing to do with how, you know, the Asian market was perceived in shark water. It had to do with the fact that Sea Shepherd was associated with the Dalai Lama. I mean, go figure. But those are the kinds of things that Rob was working on. And for sure, we have made progress. But I think really the topic needs to expand from shark fin to shark products in general. And really, you know, it kind of falls, like we talked about before, the burden falls on the consumer to become educated and really understand. I mean, labeling doesn't require these companies to actually say shark product is in their products, and they can mislabel things as well, and that's from food to cosmetics and everything in between. And I think, you know, it starts with education, and it also starts with each individual person taking responsibility for what they buy and what they have in their home and what they consume.
Absolutely. Finally, as stated in the film, Rob says we have to insist on a world that is free of using sharks for profit. He says be conscious of what you eat and where you put your dollars. So we just have a couple minutes left here. Brock and Julie, what are your final words for our listeners, and what can our listeners do to help save the sharks and support your campaigns?
Well, I think that Robbie puts it best in that quote that you just used. You know, we as consumers do have to become educated on what we're putting into ourselves and into our homes, and there's no way around it. Sharks need to be protected. They cannot be fished any longer. They're at the brink And we need to change the way that we are doing this. So we need to value them as something that's worth more alive than it is dead. And there's not that many that are remaining at this point. They've been the most prolific apex predator in our oceans, and that is for a reason. We absolutely must insist that this no longer can be done to our planet.
In your final words, Julie, for our listeners?
I would say Rob would tell everyone to be a hero, right? I mean, he obviously was a hero to all of us and just larger than life and was able to accomplish so much. But every single person in every single day of their life has the ability to make choices that impact the planet in a positive way. I mean, imagine if we all left the Earth just slightly better than the way that we found it. And every time we say no to a straw, or every time we do a beach cleanup, or every time we fight for legislation that, you know, protects the things that we're passionate about, we're able to really kind of let Rob's legacy live on in all of us and become a hero for the planet.
Thank you, Brock and Julie, for coming on the show today to speak about shark conservation issues and the new film Sharkwater Extinction, which will open in theaters nationwide on October 19th. But there are also two special presentations of the film showing this weekend as part of the Vancouver International Film Festival, tonight at 6:30 p.m. and this Sunday, September 30th at 2 p.m. You'll both be at the screening tonight, is that right?
Yes. That's right. Yeah.
That's amazing. So you can go to VIFF.org. That's VIFF.org for more information and to buy your tickets. Also, please visit the film's website, sharkwater.com. There's lots of resources there, information, and you can find out more about the film. So thank you so much for coming today, and I hope you enjoy the film screening tonight. I bet it's going to be really good.
Thank you.
Thank you so much
for helping us get this information out.
Absolutely. So you have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show on Friday, October the 5th, the weekend before our Canadian Thanksgiving. We will feature an interview with Alexandra Morton, Canadian-American activist, author, and marine biologist, who has dedicated nearly 40 years of her life to restoring the balance between the people and the wild salmon off the coast of British Columbia. We will have her on to discuss the harm of fish farms on wild salmon and the impact on our starving southern resident orcas, whose prime food source is Chinook salmon. Plus, we'll have an interview with local activist Zoe Pellid on Vancouver's new vegan education center in Mount Pleasant opening next week. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animal Voices is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Once again, this show is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. We are going to be leaving you today with a mix of two songs, Child of the Water by Chantal Kraviasek, as featured in the film Sharkwater Extinction, followed by more of the soundtrack music that I played earlier from the original Sharkwater film by composer Jeff Rona. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
With the tears we cry, we fill the sea of love. Let the one breathe. Down, down beneath. And let no one be afraid. You are loved.